Committee of the Senate Special Committee on Budget for Tuesday, June 28, 2005. I'm going to change the agenda a little bit, and we're going to go directly to SB 228 relating to physical education and open a public hearing. Ms. Sexton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. Senate Bill 228 is in front of you in its unamended form. It would establish a minimum amount of participation in physical education programs at the K through 8 public school and public charter school level. The bill does specify a specific number of minutes of each school week for kindergarten through grade 5 and students in grades 6 through 8. And it also specifies the requirements for PE instruction and the qualifications of the instructors. You also have a submitted Dash 1 amendment, which is part of your packet. I've also hand-engrossed that so that you can see it in the context of the original measure. The amendment would extend the operative date for full compliance for the PE requirements to the school year beginning 2017. That's about 12 years from now. It would also direct the Department of Education to collect and report on data regarding the number of minutes of PE instruction provided to students, and that data collection would begin to establish a baseline, and so that would get started before the full compliance responsibilities are in place. It would also establish a grant program that would be administered by the Department of Education to award grants to school districts and public charter schools in order to meet the instructional requirements. And the bill, with the amendment, would establish a physical education fund for receipt of revenues appropriated for the grant program. And it would also require the Department of Education to convene during the 05-07 biennium an advisory committee to develop the rules and criteria for the grant program, the grant program being implemented in 2007-09. The bill would not have any revenue impact. It may have fiscal impact. I received about 25 minutes ago from the Department of Education their estimate, which I've not had an opportunity to review with them in any at all, much less in any detail, to determine the nature of the expenditures. They are associated with data collection and the advisory committee, and it's in the neighborhood of $150,000, but it has not undergone any analysis by the Legislative Fiscal Office.
And members of the committee, since the time that Ms. Sexton's brought this to me, I've conferred with Senator Schrader. We are referring some bills out now. We referred a number out where the fiscals will have to be done when they come to the floor, but they're not always going to be available in committee. The fiscal should be in the neighborhood of $150,000. Senator Schrader said we're going to work to try to get the fiscal down a little bit, but he's okayed me to go ahead and pass the bill out today. So, and that's a lot different fiscal than the bill unamended would have. So, with that, Senator Courtney. Okay, we have a public hearing that's open for SB 228. Senator Courtney, would you please identify yourself for the record?
Chair Devlin, members of the Subcommittee of Education of our Budget Committee 7, my name is Peter Courtney. I live at 2925 Island View Drive North here in Salem at 97303. I'm a state senator. My district is number 11, which includes portions of Salem, all of Jervis, and all of Woodburn, and the land in between. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 228. This bill comes to you from the Official Policy Committee of the State Senate, the Education Committee, the hard work of that committee, chaired by Senator Mickey Walker. And things have changed dramatically since it. I testified before that committee, and today when we are here to discuss it, I'm not going to read to you the extensive testimony I presented to you. I'll just read parts of it. I'll refer to parts of it. The last 25 years, quarter of a century, we know that from 6 to 10 years of age, the obesity level of our young people has doubled, and the adolescents has tripled. We know that from 1994 to 2001, diabetes has increased, at least nationally, some 62%. And we also know that in our state, 23% of 8th graders and 22% of 11th graders are overweight. And the thing I find remarkable, and I'm not proud of myself on this either, Oregonians are among the most obese in the western United States, which surprises me to even make that kind of statement. But it's coming from certified smart people. I say that because this is such an outdoor state, such a physical activity state, but that is what the stats are now showing. But more importantly, in the testimony that I found riveting before Senator Walker's committee was the statement I'll read. Researchers are predicting that because of the health complications that are linked to obesity, today's children will actually have a shorter life expectancy than their parents. I have never heard that until I introduced this bill. That is a very dramatic statement. My parents always taught me their job was to make the generation which followed them, they had a better life, better opportunities than they had. But in the fact that I don't know your different ages, whether we're talking about your children, but we're at least talking about some grandchildren here, their life expectancy now will be less than those of their parents. Many things need to be done because we know that physical activity, which is alone, can't solve the problem. There's many ways we're going to have to make a run at this thing to deal with this monster, which is now before us. But one of the things I noticed is that if you look at physical activity in the area of academic world, that it shows a very positive connection between physical activity and academic performance. Physical activity programs have been linked to increased mental concentration, improved math, reading, and writing test scores. Students who take daily PE, miss fewer classes, have a more positive attitude towards school, and earn better grades. Overweight students are absent from school 6 times more often than non-overweight students. Now, I didn't make up those stats. You can question them. You can bring forth the certified smart people. But that is a very dramatic statement about, you know, we talk about funding education, how we're going to structure that funding. But we talk about the quality of life the children are in these schools and their performance, their absenteeism, their grades, et cetera. And so the magnitude here is just beyond description. You might be interested to know, that, and I have said this to many people in my life, because I just, especially out-of-state people or other people I talk to, but even people in the state, Oregon has no uniform requirement for physical education in public schools. None. Absolutely none. A school can have no PE. They're violating no laws. There's nothing requiring them to have any PE at all. And basically what this bill would do is require at least 150 minutes of PE per week for students in kindergarten through fifth grade and 225 minutes weekly for students in middle school. I'll leave it to your understanding of basic human nature why you want more minutes of PE for students who are in the middle school area versus even in kindergarten all the way through fifth. By the way, at least half these minutes would be, have to be spent on actual physical activity. What that means is they also need to be receiving instructions about lifestyle in terms of the other minutes. Having said that, I got my brains beat out. Everybody thinks that when you're a presiding officer, you get whatever you want. Well, I'm standing before you as a defeated person, a crushed person, because basically I have been told in no uncertain terms by individuals such as some of you, as well as the co-chair, I guess we now call him the chair, that we're not spending $13 million, Courtney, to do what you want. You can just forget it. And so basically, I have dramatically amended the bill down to a point where we're now going to ask that a program be developed in terms of meeting certain standards. We've moved out to the year 2017, that a grant program be developed by the Department of Ed. The grant program will not be made available during this biennium. There are certain standards to develop that grant program working with the Department of Ed. And we'll go from there. And hopefully, over the period of the next few legislative sessions and maybe the next 10 years or so, we'll develop a program in the state of Oregon that we have PE in our schools to at least try to deal with it that magnitude. That's the best I can do with a bill in terms of this session, and I'll accept that. I'll accept that. It saddens me because I really did want to see us have a more comprehensive approach to PE, recognizing full well that it's also a parental responsibility. It is not just a school responsibility. But the magnitude of the opposition to the bill is great, as well as the financial situation. So with that, I am extremely grateful that you'd even consider this bill. I'm still very grateful to Senator Vicki Walker and her committee, which heard the testimony. I had many more visual aids at that time, and they were willing to move the bill rather quickly to this committee, and I appreciate all of you allowing me to come here today. I know you have this tremendous caseload in front of you to make a statement and also file an official written document, which I like to do. And I'm obviously abbreviating my testimony because I don't want to take more of your valuable time. So Chair Devlin, members of the committee, thank you, and I'll welcome you to take any questions or comments or criticisms you may have of me, have for me regarding Senate Bill 228.
Mr. Garrett, are you here to assist the President? Or?
Yes.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. President, I'm disappointed, as I'm sure you are. You said you were defeated, crushed, told you couldn't spend $13 million. This morning on the radio, I woke up to the person doing the news saying that this legislature has become one that is passing out watered-down versions of bills, and then they talked about the bill yesterday. They had Senator Montes Anderson speaking on the floor about the DECA bill, that we're banning a substance that's already not even used, and we're merely requiring a report for the other. Are you concerned that that's what's happened here? Has this really become a resolution now, or is this the political reality that this is all we're going to get, but at least it begins the discussion?
Chair Devlin, Senator Walker, when I look at the vote in your committee, and we'll see what happens to the vote in this subcommittee, and then we'll see what happens to the vote on the full committee, and then we'll see what happens when the bill gets to the Senate floor, and then we'll see what happens when we sign it. And if the vote is significant all the way along the lines, then I think that we will be making a statement regarding PE in our schools, to be very frank with you. So I see it as more than a resolution. I do think it's received good review in your committee, Senator Walker. This is a committee loaded with talented people, and then the full budget committee. So we'll see how it works, you know what I mean, in terms of what kind of statement we may make along the way as to how significant the bill is or not. It's no secret that I feel very strongly about this, but it's also no secret that the public is really getting on board. You know that. So we'll see. I think the jury's still out.
Mr. Chair, I need to make a comment, and we did. We listened to a great deal of testimony. My bill file is pretty thick. We had some good testimony. President Courtney brought a big 5-pound blob of simulated fat. It was pretty disgusting, but that's what we pack around. And this session, we start out with a number of obesity-related bills, and I worked one pretty significantly on the junk food and retooled that, and it died in the House after several hours of work. And there are other areas of concern, and some of it is parental responsibility, but some of it also is our society and what we teach kids through our school. I mean, when I was in school, you wore blue shorts and a white shirt and white tennis shoes. That was your gym clothes outfit. And I earned my President's Physical Fitness Award from Lyndon Baines Johnson when I was in the sixth grade, and that was the most important thing to me, and I had to race this one race all afternoon in order to score on it to win. But that was important to me because we need to really give these kids some focus. I don't like the way the bill's been watered down, but I appreciate the political realities, and I appreciate the honesty of Senator Courtney about this issue, and I'm willing to support it, but I just want a greater discussion about this among in our communities and with our state and with our federal partners, because it is a serious problem.
Senator Courtney, Mr. President, we've had a lot of discussions about this bill. I believe the bill in its current form is more than a resolution and will actually lead to some actions being taken. It's hardly a comparable issue, but I compare it to like the high needs disabilities provisions now in the state school fund. That was an item that was under discussion for a couple of sessions before it was ever added to the state school fund. This may never actually be added to the state school fund, but sometimes these discussions take more than one session, as I believe Senator Courtney, with his vast experience, recognizes. The need is very clear. The need is very present. I think the difficulty we're having this session is that the dollars are just not there for a lot of items, and this might evoke a comment from Senator Gordley. I can say this here. I was almost tempted to write, in my opinion, to the Oregonian on this. I thought I maybe should send a calculator to the editorial board for the Oregonian, because if we budgeted on the basis of everything they advocated that we would fund, and that is no way to diminish this bill, but they've asked us to fund the state police more adequately. They've asked us to fund human services programs more adequately. They've asked for much higher K through 12 budgets than we have the capability to fund this session. They've advocated that we get greater funding for higher ed, which many of us agree with in community colleges. But no one's here talking about how you're going to pay that bill. I do think that getting this in, getting the work done, is going to lead to dollars being devoted to this, maybe modest dollars this coming biennium, but I think significant dollars to try to improve physical education programs for children in elementary and middle school. Senator Whitsitt, then Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Chair Devlin. You know, I will support this bill in the committee, and I will support it on the floor. I don't like the bill the way it's written, but I do like the concept. I think it's a seminal need for our school children. The statistics are formidable, and they you know, when they're that skewed to one side, they can't be fixed. They have to be real. I do not believe that there should be a need for expansion of funding outside of the formula in the form of grants. And I don't think there should be any need for delays. I know, Mr. President, that I've concurred with you about this before. I don't believe there's anyone on this panel, unless it might be the young Senator Walker, who had physical education taught to them by anyone but their homeroom teacher. And I believe that to say that we cannot afford to have our children have physical education because we can't afford to have someone with a master's degree in kinesiology teach kindergarten kids is ludicrous. And I know I've made my feelings made on the Teacher Standard Practice Commission's restrictive access to the profession in before, and I'll say it again. For a physical education instructor to meet the requirements, there's four pages, 13 sections. I think each section has six or nine different line items that they're required to teach physical education. I submit that it would be better to have our children run and play with some supervision on the play yard and get the 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 40 minutes of exercise than it is to say we can't do it because we can't afford to hire someone with a master's degree to watch them. Thank you.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, President Courtney, for your leadership on this issue. I just want to point out an irony that is stated in the staff measure summary in the background material, the background statement. If you read the last two sentences, I think you'll understand the irony I'm referencing. In 1999, the legislature approved physical education to be part of the Certificate of Initial Mastery. In 2003, the legislature removed physical education, among other subjects, from subjects in which students must demonstrate proficiency in order to receive a Certificate of Initial Mastery. I guess the irony for me is that, you know, we are a legislative body that is terribly inconsistent in how we establish public policy and then fund it or don't fund it, or give the policy time to be fully implemented, et cetera. You've heard, Mr. Chair, my, as has this committee, remarks before about the inadequacy of revenue that leaves us in this bind and unable to fund something that is just so basic and so fundamental, but we're not going to do it because the revenue isn't there to address, again, something that is just so it's so basic, so fundamental. When I was in high school,
just kind of picking up on where the senator left off, I went to an all-girls high school, Girls Polytechnic High School in Portland, no longer exists. We had a PE teacher, and it wasn't just about running around on the on a playground. There was a course of activities that were focused on building strong and healthy bodies and minds. I'm going to leave it there. But again, the legislature needs to get its act together with regard to when we set a policy, are we going to fund it or not? Are we going to put the resources behind that which we say we want to do that's supposed to better serve our students?
Thank you, Senator Courtney. Thank you, Mr. Garrett. We will close the public hearing. I will open a work session on SB 228. Is there a motion to adopt the dash two amendments or dash dash one amendments?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. It's been moved to adopt the dash one amendments. Is there any discussion?
Only, Mr. Chair, that political realities, what they are. I think this is really a good bill. Gets the discussion on the table and starts getting our kids where they need to be in terms of being physically fit. And I agree with Senator Gordley, that broader discussion about the vision of education and the funding of it really needs to be had. And I'm going to make it my priority, as it has been all session, but I'm going to continue even harder in the interim. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion? Hearing no objections to the motion passes. Is there a motion to recommend 228 as amended to the full Senate Special Budget Committee with the due pass recommendation?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
It's been moved to recommend it to the full Senate Special Committee with the due pass recommendation, SB 228. Any additional discussions? Any objections? Hearing no objections, motion passes. I will carry to committee and to the floor, but I will ask that the Senate Chair allow Senator Courtney to be a co-carrier on the floor. I will do the fiscal on the floor. He can do the oratory, I will do the fiscal. We will now move to the Oregon Health Sciences University. We're in a work session on the Oregon Health Sciences University, Mr. Bender. Committee, we have a little bit of an issue here because I've been notified by at least one member that we're going to have members moving in and out that have different things going. So whenever we get, we may defer some motions that are in this until I have the requisite three votes that I need on some items. So, Mr. Bender.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My conference committee my conference committee starts at 1:45 in hearing room D. So I will expect that I will be summoned if I'm needed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For your work session on Senate Bill 5604, which is the vehicle for the OHSU funding bill on the Senate side, I've distributed two items to you. One item is a memo with yesterday's date titled the LFO recommendation on the Oregon Health and Science University SB 5604. For those of you who were able to look at the memo that was emailed to you yesterday, this is identical. There are no changes to this from the one that was emailed to you yesterday. I'd also, though, have distributed an additional item which I did not distribute yesterday that I'd like to refer to just to put things into context, and that is this one-page table, which I call the version comparison cheat sheet, that sort of explains and outlines very clearly what it is that's in this budget. I think it's, frankly, much clearer than my memo is. And what this shows is in the leftmost column, this is a reminder to you of what is in the governor's recommended budget for OHSU. And the two columns to the right show the adjustments that are supported in the Senate budget plan and also for your information. There's also the House budget plan there as well. But what the governor's budget did was it reduced funding from the current biennium level by $32.8 million,
and did not provide specific direction on what programs should be funded to the Oregon Health Science University, with the exception that the Poison Control Center was to be funded with about slightly less than $2.8 million in general fund for that program. The OHSU Board of Directors met and determined that at the governor's recommended budget level, they would institute or implement the following reductions in state support from the current biennium level. And those are shown in the leftmost column, and you heard testimony about this in Phase 1 and Phase 2, but there was a $3.8 million reduction to the School of Nursing. Again, all of these are from the current biennium level. A $5.6 million reduction to the School of Medicine, a $4.7 million reduction to the School of Dentistry, a $4.5 million reduction to the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, a $1.8 million reduction to the Office of Rural Health and the Area Health Education Center's programs, and a $12.4 million reduction to the hospitals and clinics programs, which is, by the way, an elimination of funds to those programs, with the exception of the $2.4 million that I mentioned earlier for the Poison Center, which is a part of the hospital and clinics budget. But otherwise, support is eliminated in the governor's budget. If you look at the column Senate, these are the amounts that are in the Senate budget plan and that the LFO recommendation is consistent with. That is to say, for the School of Nursing reduction, the entire $3.8 million reduction is restored. So funding is provided at the current biennium rate into the next biennium. If I could just skip ahead medicine and dentistry for now and come back to them. You can also see that the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center reductions of $4.5 million are entirely restored in the Senate budget, as are the Office of Rural Health and AHEC budget reductions. So those three categories, nursing, CDRC, and rural health, AHEC, are restored. For the schools of medicine and dentistry, there are partial restorations of the cuts in the governor's budget of $2 million for each of those schools. For the hospitals and clinics program, when you combine this with the Poison Center, there's actually a further reduction of $1.3 million from the level in the governor's budget. That leaves a total of $1.4 million for the Oregon Poison Center, which is the amount that they received specifically in general fund this biennium. And the budget directions to OHSU are that they are to maintain the service levels of the Poison Control Center at that level of funding. I will not go into the House numbers unless there are any specific questions, but you can see the version. That version has passed the House floor.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What do these cuts in hospital clinics mean exactly? What do they mean? What is cut?
This is a reduction from the level of general fund that was provided to the hospital and clinics budgets in the 2003-2005 biennium. These funds form quite a small portion of the entire hospital and clinical budget. The main source of funds in that budget are the patient service fees for patients that are treated at the hospital and clinics.
Wasn't the largest portion of this actually identified as being for what was termed undercompensated care?
There was a large portion of patients that fell into that category.
So basically these cuts are going to be hurting patients. That's basically what you're telling me.
These cuts will provide less funds to support the operations of the hospitals and clinics, and in testimony that we received, or that you received earlier, OHSU had indicated that if they were required to make these, or to, if these cuts were upheld in the budget process, that they would find a need to seek to increase the proportion of their clients who are able, their patients who are able to pay full amount, as opposed to patients who are paying, for whom they receive a lower payment scale because of their participation in Medicaid or because they don't have health insurance.
And I think part of this discussion was also that should this cut stand, which I believe it will, that there has to be a greater discussion in the Portland metropolitan area about hospitals more equitable sharing the cost of undercompensated care.
You're actually hurting the poorest of the poor, but I can tell.
No. Well, no.
It's uncompensated care.
It's not uncompensated. It's undercompensated care.
What's the difference?
I think about everybody has the same amount of charitable care. Or
actually,
there's a big debate. There's a big debate.
Yeah.
There's a huge debate that about. If I had Senator Schrader in here, we could be in a debate for the next 20, not 20 minutes, for the next 3 hours on this. But there's a huge debate. There's a huge debate. Do you get the anecdotal evidence of the party that's picked up, and do they go to Good Samaritan, or does somehow does the ambulance end up at OHSU?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'll let you finish.
Yes. Senator Nelson, did yours.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I want to follow up on that because there was discussion. OHSU has complained that they take on a greater share of the charity care in the Portland metropolitan area. And I understood from discussions earlier in the session that we were going to talk about that in terms of a budget note and setting up some task force or work group or some such thing. I mean, there were two issues in my mind that we were going to do a budget note on. One was that issue, and the other one was just exactly what responsibility this legislature has to continue to provide funding to OHSU since they were cut off and made an independent entity. And so I thought those two discussions were going to be had, and I don't see them here, and you've just now made reference to that. So.
The first issue, I don't know if it was ever going to result in a budget note. There was a general discussion that OHSU had an issue that they had to find some ways to resolve with other caregivers in the metropolitan area. The second issue about the state's long-term relationship to OHSU and the future of that relationship was drafted in a budget note. In fact, I've seen versions of that budget note that I think were okay with OHSU and were okay with the proponents of that budget note. But at this particular point, and this is his right, I'm just saying it as a matter of fact, the House chair has refused to concur with that budget note. And under our agreement, budget notes that do not have the agreement of both chairs are not included in any budget. Yes, Senator Gordley.
Well, I'm confused, and I appreciate Senator Nelson's question, which I think needs some more clarity in response. And I'm looking at the budget note, page 2, which hopefully does add some clarity if I'm reading the language correctly. In about the middle of that budget note, number 2, it says the program offerings funded with the support of the general fund and medical and dental student enrollments in the schools of medicine and dentistry will not be reduced. Now, that's a statement about program offerings and student enrollments.
I think it is a statement in regard to those items in which we have provided general funds. We, under all Senate proposals that have been discussed and that have been reviewed by this committee, we have never actually had funding for the undercompensated care item in our budget proposal, so they would be receiving no general funds.
I'm not talking about uncompensated care.
Yeah.
At this juncture, I'm just trying to get clarity about the language in number 2.
Yes.
as it relates to the question that Senator Nelson raised. And, if that is answering his question, it also answers my question. There's a second part to what I want to point out in the budget note.
Yes, please do.
Want me to do that now? Okay. I'm looking at the language in the very last sentence. The university will use the general fund allocated for hospitals and clinics, including the Oregon Poison Center budget, to retain the existing level of services of the Oregon Poison Center, but not just the Oregon Poison Center. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. With the expectation that the university hospitals and clinics will continue to serve Medicaid and uninsured low-income patients as part of their public mission. Senator Nelson, does that get at what you were asking?
It just says retains existing level of service in Oregon Poison Center.
That was the intent. Okay.
It doesn't go any further than the Poison Center.
Okay.
That this somehow or another you're going to make up these other things by charging patients that actually can pay or something.
Yes. Can you provide some clarity?
Certainly. First of all, I would like to mention that this budget note is very similar in some of the comments, in some of the elements that you've been discussing, to the one in the House budget bill as well. Particularly number two, which Senator Gordley was reading, that states that the program offerings funded with the support of general fund and medical and dental school enrollments in the schools of medicine and dentistry will not be reduced. That language is in both the House version and yours. As you can see, the House version, though, provides more funding for the School of Medicine and for the School of Dentistry than yours does. OHSU does believe that under the House version that they can maintain their program offerings, though if granted without this particular budget note at the Senate level, they would not preserve all of the program offerings in the schools of medicine and dentistry. With this budget note, if you direct them to do this, even at your lower level of funding, and they concur to do that, it will require them to basically budget for services in a way that they would not otherwise, that their board would not otherwise do, in the sense that they would have to be willing to, unless they found some other source of money, accept a larger loss in the university budget than their board has set as a target. So,
and one thing to keep in mind in that, I know that there's that difference, but when people look at these items, the amount of state funds to the School of Medicine or the School of Dentistry, whether it's under the Senate budget or House budget, is significantly more than these items that are listed. These are just the add-backs to the governor's budget.
Those are the amounts.
Yeah, $25.3 million to the School of Medicine and about $10 million to the School of Dentistry under this budget.
We would also expect tuition rates to be different, perhaps under the Senate and House plans.
The only thing that I understand this budget note says is to maintain some differential. It does not define the differential.
That's correct.
Actually, we've pretty much explained the budget now.
And due to the nature of this budget, most of the explanation is in the budget note. But, of course, our recommendation is that you increase the general fund appropriation to OHSU, and this, of course, is compared to the governor's recommended budget level, that you increase this by a total of $12,788,167, which represents about a 24% increase in general fund from the level in the governor's budget, and that you approve the budget note, which indicates that essentially the funding is as shown in this, on this table in the Senate columns, that you approve line item appropriations as shown in Recommendation 2, a line item for education in general, for hospitals and clinics, and for the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center. And finally, that you approve performance measures that are shown. The list here contains 50 performance measures, but actually there are recommendations here, if you choose to approve them, to delete some of these from this list, and for others, for them to just maintain internally but not keep as a performance measure. They would then have 31 performance measures actually remaining if you accepted this recommendation. The recommendation includes, furthermore, that for each performance measure, university report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee by August 1st to have targets for the performance measures approved, to have performance measures which are labeled develop approved, and also to the recommendation is to request that the Joint Legislative Audit Committee review reducing the number of performance measures, consolidating them and refining them, and focusing them on program outcomes. So that is the recommendation regarding performance measures, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions you have.
For the committee, in discussions with the chair about the performance measures, his general comment was that they were very well written, that some of them referred more to outputs than actual outcomes, but that it was an incredible number of performance measures for a single agency, and we're trying to move them down to reasonable levels, and having 50 performance measures was a little bit much. With that, we are at a point where I would normally move to a vote, but I may not have the votes in committee to do that at this point. Yes.
I would like to discuss something with I mentioned to you, I believe, on the floor yesterday that I had not received information on the retirement and medical benefit premiums, and I did receive that yesterday. And I would like to share that with the committee because although they didn't compare their costs to private sector costs, they did compare their costs to Oregon University System costs. And although I may have maligned them earlier, they have done an admirable job of reducing their costs. In the CERS ballpark here, they have essentially reduced, in their unclassified and ONA positions, they've reduced their cost by about 50% compared to U.S. on a monthly basis per individual. And in the medical benefit area, which is just eating us alive, in the unclassified and ONA employee plans, their personnel are now paying about a third of the premium. The classified employees are only paying about 10%. But not surprisingly, the institution paid medical insurance cost percent increase, incremental increase from the previous biennium, 305, was only 8%, and is projected for 5% the next year. Whereas this is comparing to 25% increase in OUS. So perhaps private enterprise does work. Have significantly, even though they're continuing to cover their employees for retirement and medical benefits, they've significantly reduced the cost. And with 11,000 employees, that is a significant savings in money.
One clarification on that maybe I can get a nodding of the heads. On the PERS, do you have a UAL bond? unfunded liability. Did you participate in the state? You can come forward. Many governmental entities, the state, many local governments, many school districts, have issued bonds to basically cover their long-term liabilities under PERS for a portion, thus lowering their actual PERS rates. Have you done that?
For the record, Leslie Hallett, Provost OHSU. I apologize for taking your time because I don't think I know the answer. I don't believe we have,
okay.
But I will find out and let you know.
And your employees, they participate as a distinct unit from state government now, right?
Yes, we are a separate account in PERS, okay. And that's really the explanation.
Yeah. Senator Whitson, one of the issues relative to PERS, well, more relative to health care, actually, than to PERS, but to health care, is the university system has come to some of us and said if they could actually insure their employees outside of the rest of state employees, their health care costs would be lower because, on average, their employees are younger and healthier. And so it's...
Chair Devlin, I appreciate that, but I don't think when we're talking the numbers
yeah.
we're talking here, I don't think that's the entire.
It's probably not the entire.
And perhaps that's not even the most important. It appears to me that we have had some significant management changes here, which have brought down the cost of the medical premiums, increased the amount of the personnel share, of the employee's share, but also
right.
overall greatly reduced the premium. I think that would be appropriate, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Leslie Hallett, Provost at OHSU. And, yes, I think the flexibility to manage it in a business-like manner has greatly benefited us.
I wonder,
yes,
I might call just one other thing. If there would, I would really like to see a comparison just on time, of OHSU compared to, say, Kaiser Permanente or some other equal private enterprise and see how you're doing against that. But you certainly, from the standpoint of the Oregon University system, there is no comparison.
We'll be happy to try and obtain that.
Thank you. We will stand at ease for a moment. Call to Senator Walker to come. Today for us. Well, actually, not today for Senator Bartlett and myself. But Ms. Meyer will be leaving legislative employment here on Friday and going, I believe, full time to the workers' comp. So,
congratulations.
You won't be here for the second half of the session. Okay, so as long as it's here. I can't look this way because Sciences University. If I have a motion to approve the LFO recommendations, including the packages, budget notes, and all adjustments and the performance measures at this time to recommend all LFO recommendations on the Oregon Health Sciences University budget to the Senate Special or the Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. Do I have a motion?
Yes, you do.
Okay. All the LFO recommendations have been moved by Senator Broadley. Is there any discussion?
Now it's
there's a lot of discussion.
Senator Nelson.
Well, yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be a no vote on this budget. I mean, this is kind of there is some humor in all this, in this kind of dire situation. I mean, as I was sort of teasing with the chair that when Senator Gordon was gone and Senator Walker, if we just convened the meeting, we could probably solve this problem very quickly with Senator Wissett and myself, and we would get this process moving. But what I see it happening, this is a very symbolic budget, I think, for our whole situation that we're in, with our budget impasse. I mean, I'm looking at myself and saying, I'm really surprised that my colleagues, who I greatly respect on the other side, the colleagues, doing away with $3.6 million out of school medicine, $2.7 million out of school dentistry, and just about $6 million out of hospitals and clinics. I mean, to me, that doesn't fit in with what I think of these folks as folks with having heart and compassion, because people are going to hurt because of this. And so it's kind of a role reversal in some respect, I think, when we're doing this. And this isn't going to be any way that we're going to be getting out of this session early. I mean, I see if we pass this budget out, we're going to be here a long time. There's been promises and representations made, well, this won't be the last vote, but what if this is the last vote? And this is the budget we have to accept. Well, I think that's unconscionable. I don't think we should be doing that. My charge when I was appointed to this committee was to look at those programs that were successful, that did things on a statewide basis, helped improve the employment of our state, to invest in those, to make sure those are successful. And when I look at Oregon Health Science University, and I think Senator Wittes' comments on, you know, the fact that they're doing a very good job in a lot of areas. And they help my part of the country. They help Portland. There's just so many things in here that, to vote for this budget as presented by the chair of the Senate committee or the Senate chair is, to me, not... I just don't feel good about it. I guess I won't characterize it anything more than just how I feel about it. There's a couple of things that I've thought about with this. One of the issues that I've heard from the chair of the Senate Budget Committee is this so-called agreement back in 2001, I think, on the Oregon Opportunity Bonds, that would be funding those bonds out of general fund. I see from Mr. Bender's recommendations that basically the debt service on these bonds will be financed by the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement revenues. Now, I guess maybe they go into general fund, but there was a specific fund. This isn't just general taxpayer money. This is the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement. So that, you know, there was some disagreement, I think, and people saying, well, what was that agreement back there? Well, I think this indicates that the agreement was that these debt service will be funded by the master... your Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement revenues. So, to say that there was that we should be punishing Oregon Health Science University because they at some point allegedly said that they were going to, the debt service would have to be paid after the general fund is not true. So those are the things that I think just from a trust standpoint, I think is deterring what's going on in our whole process. I mean, this is a very symbolic budget. I mean, a yes vote for this budget, and I suppose it's going to pass out because I can count. But, I mean, where's your guys' heart? Where's your compassion in this thing? You come and talk to me about it all the time. I'm asking you guys right now. You want to cut out school of nursing, school of medicine, school of dentistry, hospitals and clinics? I'm going to vote no.
I'm going to lose my third vote here in a
second.
There is a motion on the floor.
How long do I have to filibuster?
There is a motion on the floor to approve all LFO recommendations relative to Senate Bill 5604 and send it to the Senate Special Committee with a due pass recommendation. Hearing no additional discussion at this time.
Mr. Chair, I just want to get my comment on the record. I do have heart and I do have compassion, and I do hear Senator Nelson. This won't be the last word on this budget. End of my comment.
But what if it is?
It won't be.
With that, we'll call the roll.
Senator Gordley?
Before we do that, I do feel a need to respond to... and he is my friend, Senator Nelson from Pendleton. We're voting on a good number of budgets, not only in this committee, but you've heard me refer to my public safety hat a number of times, and I think about the inadequate budgets there, whether it's the Oregon State Police. We haven't figured out a dedicated source of funding for those good folks, and particularly the troopers who are out there working the highways and byways without backup. I think about the Oregon Youth Authority and just under 300 beds that they need now that we have no funding for. I think about the school lunch program the summer school lunch program that's still lingering, languishing somewhere in the building, and the list goes on and on and on. And for me, Senator Nelson, and I so appreciate what you're saying, there are some ironic role reversals going on in this process. This session that are also a reflection of, you know, what are our values, what are our priorities, what are the choices in front of us on a given day versus the next day. And it all comes back to where you and I meet, which is the inadequacy of revenue to meet Oregon's growing needs. And until we meet that challenge, all of us, we're going to keep having this level of conversation, which is helpful to a point, but it doesn't take care of where we need to go. And that's my way of responding to what you've said, and I wanted to respond just because I do have such deep respect for who you are and how you represent yourself and how you represent your thoughts and feelings in this process.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordley. Please call the roll.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Nope.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Ritchett?
No.
Senator
Ezra? Aye. Motion passes. We will carry to the full and to the floor. We will go on to SB 247 relating to the Dispute Resolution Commission. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 247 is a bill that removes a scheduled sunset on the dispute resolution programs at Portland State University and the University of Oregon. I've distributed to you a two-page sheet on rough paper that is a description of this program and of what the bill does. I would like to go through it at least briefly just to outline this program and what the bill does. If you look at the description sheet here, you'll see that getting down to the second bullet, I need to talk a little bit about the history, I think, for this bill to make any sense at all. And the history is that these dispute resolution programs at PSU and the University of Oregon were established last session in Senate Bill 904. And what that bill did last session was it abolished the Dispute Resolution Commission, which was a state agency, and transferred its programs and part of the funding to the University of Oregon and to PSU to continue the dispute resolution programs at a reduced level. There are two of these programs that were actually transferred in the broad category. The University of Oregon received the community programs. They administer the community programs that provide mediation services in centers throughout the state. What these centers do is they help private parties resolve disputes without resorting to the court system. So that's what the whole dispute resolution program is designed to do. It's designed to provide an alternative to the courts for the resolution of disputes. And the program at the University of Oregon funds centers throughout the state that help private parties when they have disputes come to a resolution before having to bring them into the court system. The program that is administered by Portland State University is called the Public Policy Program or the Oregon Consensus Program, and it works to resolve disputes that involve public bodies. So if there's a dispute between a group and a public body, the Public Policy Program seeks to resolve those disputes and to keep them out of court if possible. What Senate Bill 904 did last session, when it transferred these programs from the Dispute Resolution Commission to higher ed, was it did not transfer all the funding that had been provided to the Dispute Resolution Commission. It took some of the funding, specifically $800,000, was used to offset general fund in the Judicial Department's budget. This was, of course, a biennium when there were very severe general fund shortages, and this was part of the budget balancing to free up $800,000 in the Judicial Department budget. The money to Judicial Department budget was dedicated to court mediation and arbitration services. There were also funds that were actually used to pay one-time closing costs for the Dispute Resolution Commission, but I outlined the $800,000 here that was used for the Judicial Department budget because that becomes important in Senate Bill 247 as well. Senate Bill 904 last session, when it did all this, sunsetted the two dispute resolution programs January 2nd, 2006. So the programs under existing law will only function for the first 6 months of the upcoming biennium, and then they will be discontinued. Again, what Senate Bill 247 does is it extends the programs and makes them permanent. The source of funding for the dispute resolution services are court filing fee surcharges. I actually would not be able to tell you exactly under which cases these filing fees are collected, but they are generally collected in cases where people do file and pursue litigation in the courts. There are various levels of filing fees that generate the revenues that fund the dispute resolution functions. And Senate Bill 247 does not change those. So whether you pass that or not, it does not change these particular fees. What this fee structure does is it generates about $2.4 million in other funds per biennium. So these filing fees sum up to that amount. And there will also be, on July 1st, we're estimating that there will be between $450,000 and $500,000 in a beginning balance. So these will be fees that have been collected but have not been spent. What Senate Bill 247-A does, and this bill comes to you on the recommendation of the Senate Judiciary Committee, is it removes the sunsets on the two programs, and it would permanently distribute 65% of the dispute resolution fee revenues to the University of Oregon for the community programs and 35% to PSU for the public policy program, based on an ongoing revenue of about $2.4 million per biennium. What this equates to is about $5.56 million per biennium for the program at the University of Oregon, and about $840,000 per biennium for the public policy program at PSU. If I may ask you to turn this over, that is the permanent allocation of funds. There is an exception, though, made for 05-07, the biennium for which you're budgeting. And in that biennium, the Judicial Department will receive another $800,000 for court mediation and arbitration services. That is to say, the same amount that it received last session. But this would be the last time. After
0507, the funds would be distributed as described in the previous bullet. Given the projected resources, that's to say the $2.4 million we're expecting in revenues, plus this beginning balance that we expect to have available, what Senate Bill 247 would do would be to provide in 0507 approximately $1.35 million for the community programs and $730,000 for the public policy programs. And the next two bullet items put this in context as to what this funding level represents. The 0507 revenues would represent about a 21% increase over the current biennium level for the community programs, and a very large increase of about 484% for the public policy program. So the bill not only extends the sunset, but it is expanding funding above the level that was provided this biennium. And there's some information there. This is, again, the third bullet item on the second on the back. In 0305, the programs received, that's the current biennium, $1.12 million and $125,000 respectively. However, note that that was a reduction. If you go back to 0103, before the dissolution of the Dispute Resolution Commission, the programs received $1.3 million and $700,000 respectively. So the bill would provide next biennium roughly the same amount of money that was provided for these services in 0103, but a significant increase over the reduced level that's provided right now. The second last bullet item just talks about the permanent funding levels that would become available beginning in 0709. And the final item just notes a technical issue. The budgets for the Department of Higher Education that have passed out of both committees, House and Senate, do not include expenditure limitation to spend the funds that would be available if you pass Senate Bill 247 or the authority to hire additional positions that would be hired at PSU. What you would need to do would be to add this authority in the Department of Higher Education operating budget bills. There is, of course, more work that needs to be done on those since the two versions are not consistent at this point, are not identical at this point. So that would become part of it.
Senator Schrader wants us.
Did we get a note from on high?
He says we have no capital programs unless I get there.
Are you ready for a motion?
Yes,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 247A related to the dispute resolution programs to the Senate Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation.
It's been moved to recommend Senate Bill 247A to the full Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes. Two short questions for Mr. Bender. The first, it seems it would be very, very difficult for the...
Speak up, please. I can't hear you.
It would be very difficult for the public, public policy program to maintain a staff and management going from 700,000 to 125,000 back to 730,000. I mean, that would be, unless they've supplemented that somehow, it seemed very difficult. And the second thing is that in the 2007-2009 biennium, where is the court going to get the $800,000?
That will be an issue that the legislature will have to address in 2007.
With that move, please call the roll.
Senator Forsman?
Aye.
Senator Miller?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
A hearty aye.
Senator
Gifford?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Senator Gorley, will you carry?
I'd be happy to, or also happy to defer to one of my other colleagues.
Actually, maybe this will be
Senator Nelson's.
You guys go ahead.
No, this will be Senator. You're going to be an aye, right?
Oh, yeah. But you guys go ahead. That's fine.
Okay.
You're carrying the load. Continue carrying it. I want to say the heart and soul of what you guys have.
Okay, Senator.
I'm not saying that right now.
Okay, with that, to let the committee know we at this time do not have a meeting scheduled later this week. That does not mean that we will not have. As soon as I know, you will know.
Okay.
So with that, we are.